Mr. Leland in Rail 7. Right, Mr. Leland, so we're talking about weapons training. What did you feel about the hand grenade? And was there any kind of apprehension about?
Well,
this kind of lot of explosive in your hand kind of thing.
Well, I don't know. I somehow got the feeling, I somehow got the feeling that I sometimes wondered whether we would ever have to use them. I mean, you know, you've got to be it's sort of close range stuff. You haven't got much of a range with it, you know. And I just somehow had the feeling that
you felt it was a bit of an unrealistic.
Well, in a way.
So how far could you throw it, do you think?
Well, I should say with any accuracy, say from here to the bottom of the garden there, for instance.
And how far is that, do you reckon, in yards?
20 yards, something like that.
And that would be like the old First World War Mills bomb, kind of?
Yeah, with a pin,
I should have asked you earlier. I mean, at this stage of the war, there was still an emphasis on anti-gas precautions. Was that in your training from the start?
Yeah, we had the gas mask. So that was part of the kit. We were issued with the gas mask.
And did you go through the...
Yeah, went through the gas chamber.
And what was that? What did that involve?
And we did that at the depot.
And what did it involve?
A special gas chamber that was brought in. It was brought into the depot on the lorry, and that was it. We only did it once, no, twice. Only did it twice.
And you had to go in this chamber.
Yeah, got to go in with your mask on. Yeah, we were given we were taught how about the mask, and because you see, so far as we were concerned, we come from Civvy Street, and all our gas masks were a little square box. So I mean, we had the army one, you see, which was really a little bit different, quite a lot different. So we had to learn how to do that. Oh yeah, we had that twice. I can remember we had that twice then. Yeah.
So as you moved through the second stage of your training, you were becoming kind of familiar with the rifle, the Bren gun. The hand grenade. What about the boys' anti-tank rifle? Were you trained on that?
We never did quite a deal on that because there didn't seem to be many of them about, to tell you the truth. We started asking some questions about it, and the first answers we got was the fact that they were in short supply, apparently, at that time. And I don't think there were that many available, not to the people like the training centres like that.
So you never got to fire it? Never got to learn how to fire it?
Well, we did. But we did do, yeah, because only very much later on.
Oh, so this was later in your career. Yeah. Are there any other memories of this stage of your career, of what you were doing at this stage, that we haven't talked about?
What do you mean?
In terms of training, in terms of personalities?
Well, no, that was, generally speaking, that was about the rough, what I've told you is.
Had you been organised into sections? I mean, had you learnt
how to fight
as a section, as a platoon at this stage? Yeah. So what would that involve? Because apparently there were certain signals and movements that you
well,
had.
Well, yeah, there was. Yeah, for the field stuff, yeah. The old... I can't remember what they are, what they were now. Really, they were quite simple.
Were they signals to tell you to stand up and move or things like that?
Yeah, well the one was to... If they wanted to get a move on, they used to do this somehow.
That's like
I can't really remember much about that. But we were told about it, yeah, we were told about it. Sergeant Bond told us about that.
So he'd be organised into platoon and the sections.
Oh yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so who would be actually nominated as section leaders and so on? Would that be recruits or would they be?
What Sergeant Bond did, nobody carried any stripes or anything like that, but he just picked some who he thought would be most of somebody who could sort of, if he had reason to tell them to do anything, he'd pick out his man who he thought that would be able to carry it out, you know. He made the choice, really. We didn't have anything to do with it. We didn't care who it was.
And so did you get picked for that sometime?
No, I didn't, no. No, he had, all he did was, he only used that procedure when we were going on to doing the field training more than anything, because they may change and we probably go on one lot and he'd pick somebody entirely different and sort of give everybody another one a go, you see what I mean? To see if they could do it any better than the previous ones. Right? But no, there was we got through that, okay. That was all right.
So what happened after this stage of your training?
Well, we had to complete the range, the thing on the range. That was quite a long, because you see what they did, they stepped the range up all the time, you see. You were gradually firing from using a longer range, you go up to 300, 400, 500 yards. And together with you firing the Bren gun as well. So, you know, that took a little bit longer. The range business did take longer because it was a bit slow going, you see. You could only get so many at a time, and you'd have, say, one day on the... you'd have one day, say, you go there 3 days a week. Perhaps you'd have one day in the butts, and then you may have 2 days in the butts. And then the next 2 days, you'd be on thing, and there'd only be about half a dozen of you, so it was a bit of a slow process. So that, and then, of course, we had to get there, because we had to march there.
And how far away was it?
Well, not far. They had a special open range, the military proper place. Wasn't far.
So they graded you on your abilities on the range.
Yeah, you got yeah.
So can you remember how you were graded?
Well, okay, okay. You weren't sort of picked out for any particular reason as for being a good shot. If you were an exception, I suppose you might have said something, but I don't think that there wasn't really anybody. By and large, everybody got down to it. And
were there anybody that just wasn't any good at?
Well, there were one or two that it was a bit more difficult for them than it was for others, like everything else, you know.
So what would happen if you had a fellow that just
wasn't? Well, they had a little bit of extra tuition. That was another thing which elongated the process a bit.
What do you think made a good shot then? A good marksman? What were the qualities that you needed?
Well, the main thing was that to restrict the kick back, and to get the proper grip with your free hand. In the case of a Bren gun or with a rifle, you've got to take a free hand, but you've got to make use of it. You know, it's got to do something, not just hold it. You've got to sort of do two things with it, if you might say. But yeah, you got used to that. But that wasn't difficult.
Did you have any training in? People have said that Britain went into the Second World War preparing for the First World War. Did you have any training in trench work, you know, digging trenches and
no, that not level. Really, not really.
So that had gone. Yeah. That had gone by then.
I had, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have anything to do. The first time we ever came up against that was in North Africa.
Oh well, we'll get to that when we move to that. So how long did this period of training last? Your first 6 weeks, and then this period. How long did this period last?
The Ashburnham Road lasted about the same time.
Another six weeks.
when we'd finished at Ashburnham Road, Sergeant Bunt, when he finished, he got us together. He said, "Well," he said, "you're going back. If you're going back to the depot," he said, "and you'll be going into what they call A Company." Yeah, and that's what he said. I understand that is what they called it. That was like the posting company. And he said, when you go back now, he said, you'll go into A Company. He kept calling it A Company. And he said, from there, you could go anywhere. You could go anywhere, and you could go to any regiment. He said, I just don't know where you'll go. And he said, you'll just have to wait until you get there. But he said, you'll be told, you'll be given told when you're going to move, and where you're going to move to, and everything about it. But he said, you won't get anything of that from here. You'll get it from there. Get it from the depot. Mm.
Did you think of yourself as a trained soldier then, after this 12 weeks?
Yeah, I didn't feel too badly about it then. No.
You felt confident with the training you'd been given.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the weapons that you'd learned to use.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I felt reasonably confident. Yeah. I had mixed feelings about what he said, you know, because he said the only thing, if anything did bother me at the time, it was a fact of this business of what the next step was going to be.
So even then you knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be the Bess and Hearts?
Oh no, I knew it could be anywhere. As he said, you could go to any country, any regiment. He said, I don't know where you'll go.
Just to backtrack a little bit, Mr. Lowndon, can you remember the names of any of the other members of your platoon at this stage, you know, that group of the training squad? You were with this man, your friend Patton. Can you remember any of the others?
Well, let's see, Reg Patton, he was still with us. Peter Griffin, he was in the same platoon as me.
And he went to the DLI as well?
Yeah, well, very much so, yeah.
Anybody else?
Dick Walker. What do you think?
Oh, we'll talk about that a little bit later. So, you were a trained soldier and you were back at the depot. Then what happened?
Well, we went back to the depot and we were put into a barrack room again. We were kept together, and went into the barrack room like we did before, and then now I can't remember. There must have been some NCOs who were responsible for us, but I just can't remember who they were. But I do remember that we were all called out. Once we got back to the depot, we were all called out. When I say all, there was another group, the same size as us. I should think there was around about, rough guess, between 100 and 120 men there. just men, just like the likes of me. We were called out, and I said, somebody said to us, well, there'll be some orders coming out for you people. So they said, be sure and watch the notice board in the next couple of days, because the orders will be coming out with regard to your next posting. He said, I can't tell you any more than that. He said, they'll be coming out. And he said, if you've got any questions, he said, you'll be paraded again. He said, if you've got any questions, you must ask them then. Because I don't know, I can't tell you now where any one of you are going or when. So with that, he dismissed us, and with that, as he said, a couple of days after that, sure enough, the notice came out. Now this whole thing was a bit of a mix-up. They put two notices out. They split the entire thing in two, more or less. Like I said, there was about 60 craps in each one. That's only a rough figure, but it's rough. And they put this notice out. Now, the first one said that the following will be posted to 8th Battalion, Beds and Hearts, Otley in Yorkshire. That's what the first one said. Then there was another notice next to it which said this same again be posted to the 16 DLI Edinburgh. That's all it said. So we didn't say where to go, when we were going or anything. So of course that was the first thing we were told. That was one day. But within 2 days of that, before 2 days, we were paraded again. The same bloke who paraded us before said there's some orders coming out tonight. He said, and pay particular attention, he said, because this will be the last warning that you'll get. He said, all the details that you want will be on this order. So we waited until the evening, and the battalion orders came out, and there was the two lists again, like I said before, but on this occasion, they'd switched them round. And those who were down to go to Otley were now down to go to Edinburgh. And those who were going to go to Edinburgh were now going to go to Otley. But on the bottom of that one, that's the ones that were going to Edinburgh, that's us, it said there will be an RSM from the DMI sent to Bedford, and I'm now talking about the people who are going to Edinburgh, you will have to do a drill course, a drill cadre, with this RSM. And that RSM was Thomason. Now that's the first time that I saw Thomason. I hadn't seen him at all. I never even heard of him before then.
That's RSM.
None of us had.
RSM Thomason, yeah. Of the 16th, yeah.
None of us had ever heard of him or seen him. Well, Thomason arrived, as I said, and we did this drill cadre. Now, this included NCOs as well. Now, you're now bringing in people like some of the old sergeant majors, even Glover, Broadhead, Tony May, Gabby Day.
What was, what was the last one?
Day, Cabby Day, start of CQMSK, Day.
What was it called, Cabby?
That was a nickname for him, I don't know why.
Cabby Day?
Cabby Day, they called him. Anyway,
and
his others? Name is Day. But,
any others that you can remember?
Was, the Crook Sergeant, Sergeant Battle. Tommy Baker, Signal Sergeant. Well, all the reservist NCOs that have been called back, you see, at the outbreak of war, they were all in it, same as us, because they didn't know the drill any more than we did.
Just to backtrack a little bit, with the two lists, what did you feel, first of all, about having to go to Watley in Yorkshire, worse, about having to, what were people's feelings about that?
Yeah, well, as far as we were concerned, see, our first instruction was to go to Otley. And we didn't mind that, because at least we were being kept in the beds and hearts. That was our feeling about it. Because we were all beds and hearts. So we didn't mind. But the other one, we were glad that we weren't on the other one. Because it was a change of regiment, you see. And then, of course, you see, it was light infantry as against the heavy infantry. So we had to learn not only the marching, but the arms drill as well.
Which was very different.
Everything was quicker. Everything was quicker.
Now, that's one thing, but now the list has been changed. What did you feel then? Now that you
we weren't so happy about that, because Irish M. Thomason didn't mean anything to us, but, you know, really. But it was just the fact that we were changing regiments.
When was there any talk about why the lists might have been changed?
No, nobody explained that.
Because one of the other veterans, Jimmy James, has a story that there was some of the senior NCOs didn't want to go to the DLI, and there was some kind of little bit of funny business.
There might well have been some truth in that. I never heard anything.
Now, RSM Thomason turns up. You mentioned some of the NCOs that went to the DLI with you, some of the senior men, people like Broadhead and PSM Glover. Had you had any contact with these men before that?
No.
So you'd never really...
No, I'd never seen any of them. I didn't know any of them. Because, you see, we'd never come into contact with them. We didn't even know... They obviously must have been recalled to the depot at some time or other. Where they were, I don't know, but we'd never seen them.
So, this DLI Sergeant Major turns up. Could you just describe what happened then and how you cope with the DLI?
Well, we had to get used to him first.
What was he like?
Well, I have to say that I got to know Thomason very well, of course. You see, because, I mean, I saw him for the next few years. But I had a lot of time for Thomason myself. There were some people who didn't like him. But I don't think... I think it must be said he was a good soldier, Thomason. He was a good RSM. When he came to us, he came from... Now, you see, that was another thing. He came from Blanchbeth, possibly. I don't know where he came from, really. I'm not sure where he came from, but he'd been trained up in the north, in Durham or Blanchbeth or somewhere. But he had the training, and he was spot on. He was ready for it.
And what were the key differences between the drill that you'd learned and the drill that you had to learn?
Oh, everything was much quicker.
Quicker pace.
Quicker pace, 140.
Compared to what?
120.
And what were the other changes in terms of...
Well, the arms drill, one thing we used to have to... it wasn't so much the slope as the shoulder. They favoured the shoulder. They favoured the shoulder more than the slope in the DLI. I don't know why, but they did. But that was always the same. I don't think there was any particular reason for that. But it was very much part of their drill.
So he had to instill their style of soldier. And how long did he have to do that?
I didn't give him long. I didn't give him long. He would have loved to have stopped there twice as long as what he was. But no, they didn't give him long. I should think they didn't give him any more than 2 to 3 weeks at the maximum.
And were your senior NCOs were on the parade ground with young soldiers like yourself?
Sometimes.
And how did they feel about that being?
Well, they weren't very happy about it, really.
Because they were like being having to go back to school, really.
They weren't very happy about it, but I'm afraid they had to do it. He never took any notice of what their rank was or anything like that. Oh no.
So did Thomason have an accent then? Could you understand him?
Yeah, he had a slight Durham accent. I didn't think it was very pronounced. Not so much as yours.
So it was. It was easy to understand.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And what else happened over this 3 weeks? You knew you were going up to Scotland.
Well, it was just a case of us and Thomason then, and he it was nothing else but drill. You know, I mean, he really. You got us in good shape. I'll give him that. You got us in good shape.
And did you know what you were going up to Scotland to do? Did you know?
Yeah, we knew what we were going to do.
It was going to be a new battalion.
Yeah, we knew.
And you were still a private soldier at this stage. Yeah. You hadn't been promoted. And so at the end of the 3 weeks, you felt confident with?
Well, we felt reasonably happy. We felt that we thought we got over the worst bit. We thought we got over the worst bit by not having Thomason around our neck.
Was he a fierce kind of disciplinarian?
Well, he was the same with everybody. He was the same with the officers as well, because he took the officers as well. Not in Bedford, I don't mean.
But
he
later
took
on.
The officers in Scotland, though.
So what was his style of? Did he shout a lot, or did he?
Yeah, he did. He was. Yeah, he did. He had a very good voice, really. But no, he didn't shout. He was reasonable. You know, I wouldn't say he didn't go over the top. But he had a way of putting things over. You know, I don't know.
Can you remember any of his sayings, any of his phrases?
Well, no, not really. He had, I think it was just his style, really. He was quite patient with us, you know. He knew that we were making, he knew what the changes we were making, and he made allowances for it.
Was there anybody that's trying to get out of going to Scotland?
No, I don't think, not that I know of.
So you all reluctantly?
We'd given in to it then.
So you had your 3 weeks of that, then what happened? Did you have a leave or did you have any?
No, we didn't. I don't think we had a leave.
Because obviously the 16th Battalion was formed around about the same time as Dunkirk. Can you remember anything about that? Any impact of the Dunkirk evacuation? Was any Dunkirk veterans passing through the barracks at this stage?
No, I don't think that. No, we didn't.
Did any stories of Dunkirk fall
back? We kept in touch. We tried to keep in touch with that for our own benefit. But I mean, it didn't make any difference to our movement. I'm just trying to remember how we must have gone up on the train.